All right, well, I'm starting the recording so we can start the official meeting whenever Natalia and Al, you wish to get going.
I've got a question.
Yes.
I get the documents that were just added.
Yeah.
I don't know if there's members of the public on, and is there a way to share those with them if they are on?
Yeah, thanks for bringing that up, Al. The documents that we're talking about, a couple of documents, a memo and a draft process timeline, have been linked to the agenda. So if you go to the city's website and open up the agenda, those documents should be linked on the agenda.
Thanks.
I'm fine to get started. How about you, Al?
Sure, let's go.
Okay. Would you like to lead the meeting or would you like me to give it a try? I can give it a try. I haven't done this
sure.
before.
Sure, okay. Might as well. Good.
Okay. So everyone, please bear with me. Welcome to the Ad Hoc District Elections Committee. It's 2:04. So my understanding, let's go ahead and do a roll call. So it's Al Clark is here and myself. Brian, will you be doing the COVID protocols?
Certainly. One second, let me grab them. Okay, so this meeting will be conducted pursuant to the provisions of the governor's executive orders N2920 and N3320 and Santa Barbara County Health Officer's order in the response to the spread of the COVID-19 virus. The committee members, staff, and any presenters will be participating by video conference using the Zoom platform. The public can view the meeting live and instructions to view the meeting are included in the posted agenda. The public can also participate in the meeting in the following ways. They can submit a comment via the e-comment link on the city's agenda website for this meeting to be distributed to committee members or read into the record during the meeting. Or the public may also provide real-time public comment through the Zoom meeting by using the raise your hand feature to notify staff they would like to make a public comment during designated public comment periods. And that concludes my remarks.
Perfect. Thank you, Brian. Next up, we have public comment. If there's anyone who would like to make a public comment on a matter otherwise not on our current agenda for today. If so, please raise your hand.
So Councilmember Alarcon, I see no raised hands.
Okay, thank you. So next item on our agenda is to continue discussion regarding the updated public hearing schedule and process for transitioning to district-based elections. With that, will we have a staff report? Is this you, Dave?
Thanks, Councilmember Alarcon. I'll give an introduction here and then we can kind of go through each agenda matter. This meeting we plan in part to kind of be a preview and preparation for the council meeting that we scheduled to have a district elections update on June 28th. We hope to kind of run through our outline in these agenda matters of the topics we'll be updating the council on and the public on June 28th, answer your question and use this time to help us prepare to make a good presentation on the 28th, get all the information out there that we want to get out there. On the 28th, a part of the purpose of that meeting before the council, that public meeting, is as a kickoff meeting. So to let everybody know that we're now rolling with this work on the district mapping process, what it looks like and when folks will have an opportunity to participate, when decisions will be made by the city council. So that's kind of the high level purpose of today's meeting as we head into council meetings and public meetings in earnest going forward. So the first item on the agenda is to talk about the schedule, and I'll turn it over to Paul. We put out for everybody, I guess I can screen share it here. I think maybe I've got two documents open. So here's the schedule, Paul, that we shared. So the only change I made was to make this a July date for the initial meeting, and then everything else runs along the schedule that I think we've discussed before. But take a look at that, Paul, and consultant team, and let us know if there's any adjustments that need to be made to that again. But we can talk about that, Paul. Maybe this first item, you can take it away on the schedule.
Sure. So one of the critical things in a CVRA conversion or under the Fair Maps Act, which is the new provisions that deal with cities that are doing redistricting, is the idea of having transparency with the public being able to participate in a number of meetings going through the process. And we should think about these meetings as both being pre-draft map and post-draft map, because in the pre-draft map period, we can hear from the community about communities of interest, about, you know, their suggestions as to what lines might want, what they might want those to look like, and get that feedback. And Sophia's put together a memo for you that I'll pass along, Dave, if we haven't sent it to you already, that's kind of like going through the kind of outreach that you can be doing in this period of time between now and then, in that pre-map hearing period to, you know, engage the community. Then the structure is that once you do have draft maps, that you make those maps available and have hearings in which you discuss the maps that have been made public. So you post a series of maps that are draft maps that you want to consider onto the city's website. It's then that you have hearings on the maps that have been posted already. You don't do a thing where you have a hearing and then somebody just pulls a map out of their back pocket and says, hey, I've created this new map, let's discuss it. So it limits the discussion to maps that have been made public, so the public has kind of a fair opportunity to participate. Having those hearings in this structure, at least two of these hearings after maps have been released, to allow for the public to give feedback and for any changes to the maps to be discussed and made prior to the next hearing. And at each time you have this, you have this 7-day window of posting maps. And then finally, you get to the point where the council will adopt a plan, and it'll be a plan that has been posted for 7 days. If they come into a hearing and the idea is to adopt a plan and they make any substantive change, meaning like they move the lines any way that's really substantive, then they would have to re-agendize, post it for another 7 days, and then have the vote at a future hearing. When I say non-substantive, I'm saying that purposefully, because there are sometimes changes that happen in a redistricting plan that don't actually move any people. So let's say there's a park and there's a line that goes through the middle of the park, and we go to the county registrar and they say, oh no, we want that line to move out to the street. Okay, moving from the middle of the park to the street might align to like the boundaries that the county is using for its precincts, but it's not a substantive change because it's not changing any of the voting population. So there will be potentially some non-substantive changes to the lines that can be done at a final council hearing or be done with the county registrar's office and the city staff, you know, as part of the final process. But this calendar that we have, probably want to consider it still being a little bit flexible because we have, we're waiting for the census data to come out and all of that work. But if we're thinking about in generalities, having a public mapping tool put up sometime next month, having outreach hearings begin in September, having maps drawn maybe by late October, mid-October, late October, And then have that process continue through the beginning of the spring so that we can have maps adopted by spring 22. That's kind of the right framework for it. And we can work with the city and with your committee on any specific dates and so on. Does that help, Dave?
That's helpful. I appreciate it. And in terms of the memo, Sophia, that you've prepared for us, that will give us some advice, some options for informing the public about how the process is going to work kind of in this period before September.
Right. Yeah. And it's a template. We've done some research on some community organizations in your area and have some best practices for outreach, but it's a template that you and your staff can look at and make specific changes with additional outreach for your jurisdiction. So we'll send that over if we haven't already.
Thank you. All right. Members Alarcon and Clark, are there any questions on agenda item number 3?
No.
Yes, no. I also should mention, and Paul, please jump in here. When we do the presentation to the council, you know, we'll go over this kind of agenda. We'll go over kind of our public outreach efforts that we, by that time, we'll have started. And we'll also, since this will be the first, meeting that we'll have had as we are kind of launching the outreach effort, we've also talked about doing a district mapping 101 kind of presentation that your committee has seen before and thought was a good, PowerPoint supported presentation on the district mapping process. So Paul, I see nodding his head. So I think we're still good to go with that aspect of it.
Yeah. And depending on schedules, it'll either be me or Sophia probably handling that 101 presentation. Okay.
Super. So at this point, Councilmember Alarcon and Clark, we can go to a public comment for agenda item number 3.
Yes. Is there anyone who from the public have a question that they'd like to ask? If so, please raise your hand.
And Councilmember Alarcon, I do not see any raised hands, although we did receive the committee did receive written public comment for this item, and it's been distributed to the committee members already.
Okay, thank you. With that, let's move on to agenda item number 4, which is to review of public outreach and map drawing options.
I'll turn this over to you, Paul, to the consultant team.
Sure. So let me just bring up the... So as we discussed, the outreach is going to be a combination of outreach that the city does and city staff does that will be outlined in that document that we're sending along. This will include, I know already, there's been conversations about doing things at farmers markets and making sure that there's information sent out to the local media. A lot of this is required under the Fair Maps Act. Now, we're doing a CVRA conversion. So the California Voting Rights Act is the primary law that's operative in the work that we're doing. But the Fair Maps Act should be considered kind of a sister law to that. It is a law where we should do everything we can to kind of treat that as kind of a best practices. The Fair Maps Act specifically is for agencies that are doing redistricting. So it's the law that the city will be forced to follow in 2031. But for this cycle, as we're doing our work, it's best to align the practices we have to that other state law, in part because it's the law that all the other cities in the county are going to be using and the law that the county is going to be using. And so it's, suitable for you to be utilizing those same tools. That outreach document will include additional things like what needs to be on the website, translation services, all these other elements that go into the outreach. Now, when we get to actual map drawing process, and the options that you're going to have, there are really three ways that maps are drawn. One is the public will be using a public mapping tool, and they will be recommending draft plans for the city to utilize in its districting process. And a lot of agencies, an increasing number of them lately, are looking at simply adopting plans that have been proposed by the public. The second way to draw draft lines is to ask your consultants to go draw a few draft sets of lines. We will be participating in all of your hearings. We'll be watching and listening as you're hearing public comment. And so we could engage in a process where you send us off and say, okay, come back in 2 weeks. And Sophia, we want you to draw three versions of plans. One version of plans, we want to preserve these neighborhoods and keep them whole. Another version of plans, we want to follow the normal street boundaries. And a third version of plans, we want to follow other governmental boundaries, like, you know, where the school board lines are, or where, other existing things overlap the city. And that's the second kind of way of drawing lines, is to send consultants off and have them come back with draft plans, given that they're listening to all the public comment as well, and they're participants and they're experts in the field. The third way of doing it is actually doing a live line drawing process, where you would, we would have a meeting like this, and I would go ahead and share my screen, and I'd bring up a blank map of the city of Carpinteria, and we would start drawing lines together as a group and talking about what the committee wants to, or what the city wants to envision as their district plan. And through that process, get to a draft plan that then would be made public and agendized for a future meeting to discuss in more detail. Those are three kind of methods for drawing lines, but they're not like mutually exclusive buckets. Oftentimes what happens is we'll have a couple plans from the public that a city council says, hey, those plans from the public, let's plan A, let's make Mr. Smith's plan A, but let's like fix that one boundary over there, and we can do a little live line draw to fix that boundary. Let's take Ms. Johnson's plan for, you know, and make that into plan B, because we really like that plan. And then for plan C, can you make a version of these plans that does X, Y, and Z? And so we'll call that plan C. So you end up blending each of those three methodologies commonly to get to your final mapping plans. And then it becomes an iterative process after that. The maps get posted for 7 days. The committee or the council comes back and discusses the maps that are now public. They might, in the intervening week or so, or a couple of weeks, have come up with some things that they like and don't like about each plan. And they want to engage in a process of either sending the consultant back and telling the consultant to fix something, or doing a live line draw to kind of adjust something, or even in one case, encouraging the public to take that draft plan and to suggest changes to that draft plan themselves. So the public again is asked to engage and make those final adjustments. Through that iterative process, eventually you get to a point where the decisions made to narrow those maybe 2, 3, 5, or 7 plans that are being considered, narrow those down into one final plan that's being considered, can be agendized, the media can know what plan is going to be voted on, and then voted on at a future hearing. That last vote has to be an up or down vote on a plan that's been public for 7 days. So that last vote is no changes. Again, like I said before, if they do make changes at that hearing where they're supposed to vote on a plan, they make any substantive changes and they would re-agendize that for a future hearing. There will be a online software that's going to be posted. That online software right now is going to be posted with data that is not the final redistricting data set, because we still don't have that. The public will be asked to draw communities of interest, but people could draw actual redistricting plans if they wanted to. It's just you have to know that when you're drawing a districting plan, you know, in data that's not the final data, it might not be actually, you know, a final appropriate plan when we get to the end. The one piece of advice that we always have in this drawing process is that members of the committee or of the council, this is going to sound a little counterintuitive, don't draw plans yet. It's important that when the council or a committee is receiving public input, that they have a clear head about what is possible, that they're not fixed into ideas that they've already developed about what the line should look like. And oftentimes the act of drawing lines in a way does more to limit your thinking about districts than it does to expand your thinking about districts. I liken it in a silly way to putting dishes in the dishwasher. Like, I have a way of putting dishes in the dishwasher, and I probably developed it when we moved into this house. But ever since then, I always put the dishes in the exact same spot in the dishwasher every time. And when my wife puts dishes in the dishwasher, it like looks crazy to me. And what I do probably looks crazy to her. But I've, in my brain, kind of become a little bit dogmatic about the way that I view the way dishes should look in the dishwasher. And the same thing happens when I draw lines. I haven't drawn lines for the city of Carpinteria, and we won't draw lines for the city of Carpinteria until the end, because drawing lines in of itself starts to frame that in your brain and makes you less willing to see other opinions. So waiting until all the community input has come in to actually, as council members or committee members, to actually draw lines yourself is really important. So I think that would be my little overview of the outreach process and line drawing process, but I'm definitely happy to answer any questions or give any other thoughts.
Thanks, Paul. One thing that struck me as you were going through this, during the process, the public drawing maps, a live map drawing process, even the council considering maps ultimately. There is a, could you talk a little bit about the how the education process occurs for people to understand what factors must the city consider in order to result in, I think you use the term appropriate, an appropriate map at the end of the day, one that's legal, in other words, meets the legal muster for a, under the CBRA.
Yeah. So what we can do is we can work with you on identifying a like a handout or a one-page document that would have the different criteria. And in the redistricting 101, we go over those criteria. But we can also make like a one-pager that you would put on your website. And it would cover what those criteria are. As a CVRA, an agency doing using CVRA, it's not as explicit as it is in the Fair Maps Act, but largely it's going to be the same things. Districts need to be equal size in the description of what equal size means. You have to follow the Federal Voting Rights Act and what that means. You have to draw districts that preserve neighborhoods or communities of interest. Districts need to be compact. They need to be contiguous. Like all of these characteristics that are necessary in a districting plan, we can provide basically like a one-page handout that could be posted on the website along with other materials to kind of help members of the community understand that when they're drawing lines, you know, they can't draw a district where one district's half the city and the other districts are all little tiny parts of the city, that the, you know, the criteria that's necessary to go into that.
Thank you. That's helpful for me.
I got a question. I have a question, if I may.
Dave, do you want to call on him? I don't know who's calling on who.
I am. Yeah, please. Hi. Please go ahead.
Dave can help me out or help my memory out. But I think a couple of years ago, we had a different consultant on this issue who was kind of looking at it prospectively for us. And they actually came up with some sample maps that appeared to be draw lines equitably for the demographics that seemed like the purpose of the map was to make sure that we made some districts where the Latino population, for example, would have a fair shot at winning an election for city council. And so they brought this map, or maybe there was a couple versions of it. Maybe there was a 5-district and a 4-district, I can't remember. And that seemed to me like a really good starting place to start moving lines around from, just because they were the experts about how to, you know, these kind of things that you're talking about, compact and blah, blah, blah.
We used a consultant, I know, during the process of educating ourselves when we entered into the settlement agreement, the CVRA claim settlement agreement. I don't remember that they had provided maps at some stage, but we could look back at the record of the public meetings and look for that and provide it to the consultant team if it's out there.
Yeah, one of the challenges will be that data, by definition, would be using 2010 census.
Different, obviously, the data is different. Yeah, obviously.
Yeah, so the data will be updated for us. Both the decennial census data will be updated for us. Also, the data that identifies the percentage of the population that's Latino, Asian, African American, or other ethnicities, that data is called citizen voting age population, and it's in the American Community Survey. The most recent update of that data was February of this year. So we have that data already. And that's the data that would be used to kind of give those Latino, as an example, population counts. If somebody has draft maps, there's no harm in looking at those as well. Yeah.
I'm not saying we should look at those or not. I'm saying that it helped me to start with something that the experts had already done, that was looking at some of these factors that need to be looked at.
Yeah. And that's one of those things where if we get down the process and maybe you don't have a lot of people submitting draft plans, or maybe the plans that you're getting submitted. Yeah. But you can always call on us and say, okay, redistricting partners, can you draw a couple draft plans that, you know, address issues A, B, and C? And we've been doing this for a long time and been doing it all over the state and other states now too. So we're definitely happy to provide draft maps. The thing that I like from a messaging standpoint is when draft maps come from the public and at the end of the process, you can kind of stand up tall and say, we did a redistricting, but instead of politicians drawing the lines, it was actually like members of the public. That's really valuable. We try to push agencies towards that route, but we're definitely more than able to draw draft plans as well.
Yeah. Okay. Sounds good.
But it sounded like, Paul, when you were going through the three ways to draw maps and the schedule on how things would unfold, that before draft maps get to the council, we've gone through presumably some combination of these, you know, public drawings that the map drawings that the public we've solicited from the public and they've submitted, consultant provided maps and or maps that come out of a live map drawing meeting. Some combination of that results in maps that go to the council. So what Councilmember Clark is asking about in terms of them getting a starting point for map drawings, they'll get that. The council will get that in any case, correct? Whether or not, sure. Whether it's consultant drawing them or public or some combination of those three methods.
Yeah, I think that by the time we get to the end of this process, we'll find maybe two things that might sound a little counterintuitive that they go together. But one is we will find that we're going to have a lot of mapping options that have been drawn by the public or that you get drawn by the consultants or whatever. The second is that I think we'll find that most mapping options have some real familiar characteristics and that there ends up being like decision points where, you know, you're either going to do AB or you're going to do BC or you're going to do DE. Like, it's not going to be a kind of random chaos of all these redistricting plans that all look totally different. It's going to be a bunch of redistricting plans with just little differences that kind of get repeated through each of the potential options. And so the council will have decisions that are much clearer about the trade-offs in the districting process than being, you know, handed three maps that look completely different from each other.
I have a question, Paul.
Yeah.
You mentioned, and I apologize, my internet went out, so
it's okay. Missed a little We got bit. You back pretty quick.
The fair, I believe you mentioned the Fair Maps Act, and once we come up with a draft map, it needs to be posted public for 7 days. Is that the minimum amount of days, or can it be posted longer, or is it recommended to not post any longer?
Yeah, 7 days? So the California Voting Rights Act has a 7-day posting requirement for anytime you're going to be discussing maps. The Fair Maps Act has the 7-day posting requirement for the final plan. So for you, we'll be having, between each discussion about plans, we'll be having at least 7-day window for the public to see them. So you can think of it that if we're having a meeting on a Tuesday afternoon like this, and we did have a draft change that we wanted to do, and we could theoretically get it out, get it posted by this evening, then you could end up having a follow-up hearing next Tuesday to discuss that, because it would have been posted 7 days earlier. But if, you know, we had some changes and we needed to have one more meeting and you wanted to meet Friday, we literally couldn't discuss the map that we had just drawn.
Got it. Okay.
But it can also be posted for 2 weeks or however long you want.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Al, do you have any other questions for Paul?
Nope.
Okay, so let's go ahead and move into public comment. If anyone has a comment, please raise your hand or a question.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was muted. Russell Ruiz would like to speak. So okay. I'll go ahead and allow him. Let's see here. Oh, you know what, Dave, I think you've got the host controls.
Go ahead, Mr. Ruiz.
Did that work?
Yeah.
Thank you. I just have a couple of comments and a couple of questions. I'm gonna start by just stating that I see myself as an observer here. I've watched this. I'm not going to repeat the stuff I've said in my written comments, but I watched the process around Santa Barbara County for several years now. And here, I hate to say it this way, but I personally don't think it's going to make a whole lot of difference, other than I think the public outreach piece is really important, because as I've stated in prior written comments, one of my biggest concerns is to try and do everything we can to find at least, three good candidates, at least good candidates in each of the three districts that are going to be subject to election in 2022. So, you know, I don't care a lot about, I'm not going to be an advocate on any of these issues I brought up. They are what I obviously think are the best approach for my small city. On the schedule, you know, I wish we could move a little faster, primarily because of that recruiting candidates question. I think obviously the sooner we know exactly what we're doing, the easier and quicker we can find candidates in each of the districts that have been established. I know throughout the state, the census issue has been problematic, and I understand that, but it's my personal perspective, resident here, lifelong local resident, I don't believe the census is going to make any practical difference in Carpinteria. Maybe a little tweak here and there, but I believe that with the information available today, we could get over 90% of where we're going to end up on census data. Then on the public outreach piece, are we going to have, what is the online part of this? I know I was surprised the city of Goleta started their process last night, and I communicated with the city clerk yesterday, and they're going to have a separate website just for district elections. And I don't know if we're going to do that or just have a page on our existing website. So that's a question, I guess, if I could ask that now. Or no?
I'll just speak up that the outreach memo that we've put together that we'll be getting to the city outlines that the Fair Maps Act requires that the website, that the city has a website page on their website that has all of the meeting information, all of the public comment and videos and agendas and maps and everything like that. And it's required to be on the city's website. And some agencies will call it a standalone website, but it technically by law has to be part of their actual city website. And it has to be maintained on the city website for 10 years. So
that's a good thing for us. So good.
Yeah.
And I can just dovetail on that. What we've talked about after the last meeting when this was discussed is developing something initially when we're trying to attract a lot of attention to the site and directing the public to it, that we that it'll operate much like the hub website did, what we developed for the COVID-19 pandemic. So when you and forgive me, I don't know the correct terminology for these features, but when you open up our webpage from the homepage, a pop-up window will come up on district elections, and you can either close it out and proceed to the city's webpage, or you can click on that and it takes you to the district elections page. You know, later on, after the maps are set, when we have to maintain it for 10 years, it'll become, you know, a subpart link on our main web page. But in the meantime, we'll treat it much like, as some of you may recall, the way we had the hub set up. We'll do it. We're looking at doing it in a similar way.
And then I know for us CARP people, it's obvious, but maybe for our consultants, I believe the most effective communication with our community is the Coastal View paper. And I'd encourage Dave and the city to spend the money to really, you know, get big prominent ads in the front of the paper that get people's attention and direct them to our website. Let's see. So maybe this is a provocative question, just but curious. Do you expect to tell the public before they start drawing maps that they have only two options, five districts, or four plus the mayor, or you're not going to say how many districts, or what is your anticipation of communicating to the public what their options are and the number of districts they can draw on their map?
Well, first off, on the media outlets, just want to address the fact that the memo that we're sending to the city, the Coastal View, is actually the top bullet point of all the media that's listed. So I don't know if that was on purpose or by chance. But on the issue of how many districts, we would expect that by the time the mapping software goes up, that there's some kind of understanding of the number of districts, because the software that we're utilizing, District R, is set to a number of districts so that it can determine the ideal district size and allow for people to draw districts and know exactly how many districts they're drawing. So at some point, when that mapping software goes up, we'll have to have some kind of an understanding. Otherwise, the version of the map where the software that goes up would just be for drawing communities of interest until we know that. When we did the city of Napa, the software was set up to have a four district mapping option and a five district mapping option, but the council really only considered the four district mapping option because they had already decided that they were going to keep their citywide elected mayor. So hopefully that decision will be made in a manner where it can be front loaded, so the community knows this is the one option in which we're drawing potential lines. Dave, do you have some input on that? Because I know that's actually the next agenda item.
Let's talk about that some more when we get to the next agenda item. I think I have some follow-up questions about how that fits into our schedule that we can discuss.
Okay.
I'm done. Thank you. I'll have some comments after the next one.
Thank you, Mr. Ruiz. Okay, so let's go ahead and jump into agenda item number 5, which is to discuss the city's options on the number of districts. Back to you, Paul. going back to you.
Well, and I think I'll kick back to Dave on this.
Okay.
He's got the memo, right? This is the one where you drew the memo or not?
Yeah, it is. I can go through that. I do want to, maybe we can start though with, there's a decision point then on the number of districts, Paul, that I hear you suggesting before we get to the point. As you point out, I guess, you know, the decision could be, let's look at both 4 and 5, or it could be, let's look at 4, or it could be, let's look at 5 and ask the public for input on any of those three scenarios. But so at some point there is a decision point. Where on this schedule then would you think that that decision point needs to be made in advance of that mapping work with the public?
Yeah, I mean, I think that it would be most efficient to have that decision be made as early as possible in the process, because the size of the district can have a big impact on how communities of interest can be considered in a potential districting plan. Especially when you're going from 4 to 5, that's a bigger deal than, you know, like Congress going from 53 to 52. That's a small little deal. But going from four up to five does have a big impact on the size of potential districts. So if we don't know until later in the process, then we can work around how that's going to be done, but it might require some duplicative work. And it might require us to buy like an additional license for the software so that we have one license for the software set up as the 4 district option, another license set up as the 5 district option. But all of that is just levels of work, not a concern about what is most appropriate for the city.
Okay, so if I hear you, the timing should occur ideally prior to our September 1st public outreach meeting. So we would do that sometime before then.
I think it'd be clearer to the public to be asking them to draw draft maps with one clear direction rather than having them think about drawing draft maps with multiple scenarios, you know?
Okay, thank you. That answers one of my questions. Councilmember Clark.
Yeah. Paul, would you be giving us sort of a pros and cons of 4 versus 5 districts kind of analysis?
Well, from the line drawing technical redistricting aspect, I think we can definitely give a little bit of input, but the considerations about 4 to 5 really have to do with whether or not you want to have the separately elected mayor.
Sure.
And that's more of a governmental decision, a policy decision for the council that we don't generally weigh in on what's better, this or that, because that's not our area of expertise. Our area of expertise is tell us how many and we draw the lines, you know?
Yeah. Okay.
From a communities of interest standpoint, there are some cases in which having smaller districts will allow for, like, let's say you had one area of the city that was heavily senior citizens. In a smaller district, that community that's heavily senior citizens could have a greater impact on an election in a smaller district. In a bit bigger district, they might not have as much impact on the outcome of an election. So in some ways, more districts means smaller districts, which can, from a districting perspective, be better. But then the more important question really is what the council wants to do in terms of its form of governance. And that question is one where we really just, it's outside of our expertise.
Yeah, thank you. You just did what I asked.
All right, well, that's a great segue into the discussion of the memo that was provided. So if it's all right, Councilmember Alarcon and Clark, if I'll jump into that part of the staff presentation.
Yes, please.
Okay, thanks. So at your last meeting, this question about the options available to the city in terms of numbers of districts was raised, and we said we'd go back and do some research. The first part of the memo talks about the direction that we took away from the meeting in terms of kind of minutes from that April meeting, and some input that we received. Paul had noted that under the CBRA, that there is kind of, you know, something that we consider safe harbor protection under the law for 5 districts and 4 districts, but not other systems that might be less than 5 or 4 districts, like 3 districts and 2 at large, for example. So that's good information for us to know. We also attached to the memo the city's settlement agreement, which also perhaps reflective of the CBRA, has a statement with regard to 5 or 4 districts being acceptable under the terms of the settlement, but not any other system. So that's kind of background on where we start. There's a section that talks a little bit then about what the law says and the elections code. Attorneys helped us with, so that's for your information. And then there's a section that what definitions are about at large and whatnot. And then there's a discussion at the end about some other things that we brought up at the earlier committees that are kind of need to be decided at some point. And we know other cities have gone through this process and so have developed, guidance or ways of making decisions about some of these other nuances. For example, early on, Paul brought up the point that, the council will have to decide at some point, which districts are the districts, how are they numbered, and which are the first districts that are up for election. So has been pointed out, November 2022 is our first election. There'll be, I believe, 3 seats that are up for election at that time. So which are the 3 districts that are up for election? That needs to be decided some way. Another example of that is, how to handle it. The situations where there are, seated council members, one may be up for election now, one later, those kind of things in individual districts, and other kind of variations or iterations of scenarios where there'll have to be a way of deciding, how those things are dealt with. And as I said, I think, Paul brings expertise and his team to the table on what options are available to the city. We have examples from other cities that we can research. And at the right point in our schedule, we'll, of course, bring that to the council's attention and tee up decision-making on those nuances. And I don't know, Paul, if you wanted to add to that, or talk about maybe when in the timeline some of those decisions might be right.
Yeah, I think there's one thing that's important to address. It's a real subtle nuance regarding this conversation about the impact of lines on incumbents. So under the Fair Maps Act and under the policies that you should be following under the CBRA, we're not drawing lines where we're saying, okay, everybody, give us your address of where the incumbents live, and then we'll start drawing districts. Like that the incumbents are the reason why lines are drawn is to protect incumbents. So that's not the way that we'll be going about this process. But at the same time, when we do come to the numbering of districts, when we come to the actual ordering of the elections, that's a point at which the council can be aware of what incumbents are living in which districts and how do the districts need to be numbered in an equitable way, where the numbering in of itself isn't being used as a tool to, make it impossible for somebody to run for office again, or harder for somebody to run for office again. So what we will do is essentially draw the lines and go through this whole process without concerning ourselves with, treating the incumbents as a community of interest or drawing lines with the incumbents in mind. But then when we get to the final map drawing process or the map adoption process, there will be a second motion that's going to be the ordering of the elections and the numbering of the districts. And that numbering of the districts will be one in which we can kind of open our eyes to, okay, which incumbents live in which areas, when are their elections up? Let's try to align when their elections are up to when these seats are up. So it's a subtle difference in the process. I just want to make sure that people who might be watching understand that that's when we start talking about incumbents, that's the only place where it will be appropriate for us to be having those conversations.
All right. Thank you, Paul. I just wanted to go over at high level the memo for you. And obviously we'll have this discussion and bring the same information forward for the council's consideration as a part of the presentation. So on the 28th. So any questions, council members?
No, none on my end.
No.
All right, we'll turn it back to you then, Council Member Alarcon.
There's no question, since there's no questions on behalf of council members, let's open it up for public comment or questions. If you have one, please raise your hand.
Mr. Ruiz.
Thank you. Dave, is there someone from Peter Brown's firm on this meeting today?
No, the city attorney's office was involved in the drafting of the memo and are supporting us, of course, on the district mapping work along with our consultant team. But as you may be able to see, we don't have a representative today from the city attorney's office
participating. Just out of curiosity, is somebody been specially assigned to district elections, or is it just who we normally use?
You're talking about has an attorney been dedicated to this from the city attorney's office?
I'm wondering, it's such a big firm, whether they had somebody who is a expert on district elections who might have been assigned.
I don't know that.
Okay. And again, these are, I'm not being an advocate, just an observer on, I read the memo briefly. I just read it right before the meeting, so I'll read it again. But I understand the safe harbor concerns, but I practiced public agency law in Santa Barbara County for 30 years, and I know Lanny Ebenstein, who is the proponent of district elections. I'm sorry I couldn't talk him out of it, but I don't like setting policy around fear of litigation when I don't believe there's any realistic prospect for litigation. And I think that's the case we're at right now, but I realize that's easy for me to say and for our attorney and staff to go, well, that's fun, easy for you to say, Mr. Ruiz, but so I get it. But again, I would not be afraid of litigation. And then the other issue about the two options that are expressed in the settlement agreement, either 5 or 4 plus the mayor. I know that we could go talk to Lanny Ebenstein and whoever else we're dealing with there and tell them, if that's what council wanted to do, that we want to have 4, 1 at large, and the at large doesn't have to be the mayor. Because I really like the protocol of rotating the mayor's chair. I think that's important. 30 years of watching local public meetings, I think it's really good for the city and for the council to have that protocol. And I know that the proponents here would say, as long as we tell them ahead of time, if that's what we want to do, they go, okay, fine. Doesn't make any difference to them whether the at-large seats the mayor or not. So that's it. That's my comments. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Ruiz. Great. Any final discussions? Okay. Then if there are no more questions or final remarks or comments, we can go on and schedule our next meeting. It looks like we have our meeting set for 2:00 on the, let me open up my calendar. Second Tuesday of the month. Does that work for you, Al?
Sure. Yes.
Okay. Does that work for you, Dave? Second Tuesday of the month at 2 p.m.?
That's perfect. 2 p.m. July 13th, correct?
With that being
I'm sorry, you broke up a little bit, Natalia. I have July 13th at 2 p.m.
Yes.
Okay, great, thanks.
With that, yeah. Yes, that's, and in terms of the, we have to, should we discuss that before we adjourn?
I didn't catch everything you said, Natalia, you broke up a little bit.
Have any ideas in terms of the next agenda items?
Well, we'll be able to debrief based on the June 28th council meeting, and then some of the things we've talked about today, we can follow up on, including when the city council makes a decision about, you know, our 4 versus 5 districts, that kind of thing. Probably have a follow-up discussion there in preparation to make a recommendation to the council. And that you guys can tell us, so far this committee has been used to kind of, you know, guide, but your committee is in a position to make recommendations, of course, to the council. So, you know, that's an opportunity where your committee may want to make a specific recommendation to the council. So you may want to think about that. If you like, give us direction today. We can agendize it in that way, if you wish, on July 13th.
I'm comfortable with that. How about you, Al?
Sure, yes.
Thank you.
Okay, with that being said, we can now adjourn. Thank you so much.
Thanks, everybody.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you. Good job, Natalia.
Thank you.
Yeah, good job, Chairwoman. Take care.